Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. The NFL season begins tonight live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live on Fox Sports Radio and right here on FS1. You know it's football season because 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell stops by. One of our favorite segments we do in the football season. 1 hour from now, it's Greg Cosell and it's Chiefs. And it's the Texans tonight, and Joy Taylor is joining me. Her brother, of course, Jason Taylor, the great Hall of Fame football player. It's in her blood. It's in her family as well. And here we go.
I can't believe it, Colin. I was in the dressing room downstairs like, wow. In March, with everything that's happening, like all of us in a panic, and here we are. We've got NBA, we've got MLB, MLS, and the NFL season is starting tonight.
And thank to you, the fans.
Yes.
We're all through it. The virus is still active. There's a vaccine hopefully around the corner, but we really got through tough times where we were indoors and couldn't go to restaurants, couldn't go to gyms, couldn't go to beaches, didn't have games. There's some positivity tonight as the NFL season begins in earnest. You know, it's interesting. We think of the NBA as the dynasty sport. You know, the Celtics in the 60s and the Lakers and the, you know, the Spurs and Michael Jordan's Bulls. But the NFL's been a dynasty sport, too. The Pittsburgh Steelers in the 70s dominated the sport. They had challengers like the Raiders and Don Shula and the Dolphins, but it was the Steelers. Then it was into Joe Montana, Bill Walsh, and the Niners. And then it was Troy Aikman, Jimmy Johnson, and the Cowboys. And then it was the Patriots for a long, 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 long time. The NFL's a dynasty sport, too. You get the right coach and the right quarterback, right general manager, boom, you're off to the races. And I think a lot of people right now look at Kansas City and Baltimore and think, oh, boy, oh, boy. I'll make a case for Kansas City, and here's why. I'm having ribs tonight, opening the NFL season. Wife told me we're having ribs. You never want to leave meat on the bone, right? And there's an old saying in sports. You don't want to leave a lot of meat on the bone. You want to give everything you have, play as hard as you can, empty the playbook, and don't look back. You lose, you win, but don't leave any meat in the bone. It's remarkable. I want you to think about this for a second. And I'm just going to take the great quarterbacks in the league, not the average ones. And there's a lot more average than great. There are questions about all of the great quarterbacks. Carson Wentz, can he stay healthy? Aaron Rodgers, can he get along with Matt LaFleur? Tom Brady, can he win without Belichick? Deshaun Watson, can he win big games, not just have great highlights? Jimmy Garoppolo, can he gain the trust of Kyle Shanahan, who took the ball out of his hands in the playoffs? Lamar Jackson, can he win from behind? Trailing, has to throw. But Nick Wright brought up an interesting point about Patrick Mahomes. There's no question, and there's also no pressure on him.
The fact that Mahomes knows he's a fully minted, made man forever, and Lamar knows the exact opposite, which is no matter how brilliant I am, if Colin Coward's right and we go 16-0, no one is going to care. It's going to come down to 12 passes if I make or don't make in the playoffs this year. Mahomes can play with none of that pressure.
It's a big deal. The ability to play freely and without pressure and not worry about surrounding critics. Mahomes and Russell Wilson are really it. But Seattle is not Kansas City right now. I like Deshaun Watson. We'll watch him tonight. But he had a 24-0 lead on Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs and lost by 20. Are we looking at the next decade, the next dynasty in the NFL? And this is where I think we may be, because I think I've seen Baltimore mostly at their best, and they shrink a little. Kansas City, I want you to think for a second how much meat they left on the bone. They couldn't figure out their defense until late in the season. They were outplayed in the Super Bowl for three quarters. Patrick Mahomes was 11th in completion percentage, 7th in passer rating, and in his last six games, with Andy Reid, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, threw 8 touchdown passes. They trailed 24-0 at home in a playoff game. Mahomes was outplayed by Jimmy Garoppolo for most of the Super Bowl. They trailed Tennessee in a playoff game. And they won the Super Bowl with a kid at quarterback. Kansas City left a lot of meat on the bone. We haven't seen Kansas City's high end yet. You really think Patrick Mahomes is going to finish 11th in completion percentage? You really think they're going to trail in the playoffs at home 24-0 again? You think Mahomes, who just admitted, I just figured out how to learn and read defenses, is not going to get better? I kind of feel like Baltimore's really good, and I do think Baltimore is a more complete roster this year, especially on defense in the back end, despite the loss of Earl Thomas. But what is scary for the rest of the NFL, we look at that Kansas City parade and we think, oh, it was just linear. They just rolled in it. Mahomes got hurt. Mahomes struggled at times. The defense was kind of a wreck for the first 10 weeks. They trailed huge at home in the playoffs. They were outplayed in the Super Bowl. And they won. That's what's scary. When Brady won his first Super Bowl and he was a kid and they didn't even rely on him, and then he won his second Super Bowl, and you're like, oh, now Brady, not just Belichick, not just the defense. Oh, now Brady's great. That's what's scary for the rest of the league. Kansas City hit on about 7 out of 10 last year and won this thing. Frightening. Can't wait for tonight, Chiefs and the Texans. So you are who you hang out with. And the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard are getting in very interesting company. I'm not into awards. I'm not into points. I'm into winning. Kawhi Leonard is going to win the NBA championship this year, and he's going to be the MVP on the third different team. Did it with the Spurs, did it with the Raptors. He's going to do it with the Clippers. They beat Denver last night. Denver looks shot now. They look tired. He won on a layover at the airport in Toronto. He won a title. But it's very interesting because you are who you hang out with, and I keep asking this question to the critics of Kawhi Leonard. He doesn't have an MVP, hadn't scored a lot of points. His career average is... Let's look at some of the clubs Kawhi Leonard currently hangs out in. We'll call it the elite club. Finals MVP and with multiple teams. Only 3 people have ever done it. LeBron, Kareem, and Kawhi. Let's call this one the Super Elite Club. We had a name to it. Michael, Akeem, and Kawhi. Finals MVP, Defensive Player of the Year. Let's go one more. Let's get silly. Let's go VIP Elite Goat Club. You've been a Finals MVP, an All-Star Game MVP, and Defensive Player of the Year. Michael and Kawhi. And now he's going to win his third championship and be the MVP with each. Oh, there's nobody in that club ever. I'll say it again. He's the anti-Harden, the anti-Westbrook. When the light is brighter, folks, he's MJ. He's at his very best. He's better in the playoffs than the regular season. So was Michael. Last night's another example. Okay, this is not Tuesday night against Memphis. This is the game you break the Denver Nuggets spirit. Oh, good God. He was so much better than everybody on the floor. Paul George didn't even play well last night. Kawhi's like, I got it. That's what Michael did. I got it. That's what LeBron does. That's what Magic did. I got it. You are who you hang out with. He's the anti-Harden and Westbrook. If the NBA players were all lined up and we were at a YMCA and you could pick teams, you'd pick LeBron and Kawhi. You would not pick Giannis. You would not pick Westbrook. You would not pick Harden. You would not pick Jimmy Butler. you would pick Kawhi and LeBron, and they're about ready to meet in a few days. I know he's boring. I know he's nonverbal. I know he wears New Balance shoes. I get it. But my top five of all time in a month when Kawhi wins it, Magic at point, Kareem at center, Michael's my two guard, and LeBron and Kawhi are my forwards. You can have Larry Bird. Kawhi is a significantly better defender. You can have Tim Duncan. I can marginalize him. I've already got Kareem. You keep telling me stats and MVPs. All I know is I watch these games. And there's only two players in my life that remind me of Michael Jordan. Kobe Bryant offensively and a little bit of defense, and Kawhi defensively and a little bit of offense. I know he just shoots a mid-range jumper. I know he's boring. I know he doesn't talk. I get it. But you can no longer deny this stuff. Last night's a great example. Paul George doesn't show up. This is what Michael did. I got it. I'll break the spirit of the Denver Nuggets. You are who you hang out with. You start naming all these clubs he's in now. He's in with Kobe, LeBron, Michael, Kareem. The worst one's Akeem. Sorry, but I'm all in on him. I'm all in on fun guy. I just know if there was a YMCA, two guys in this league, it'd be LeBron and Kawhi. And these general managers keep telling me they want centers. I want a guy who gets better in the bigger moments. There's only two in the league right now, LeBron and Kawhi. He's on my all-time starting five in a month. You can no longer deny it. Well, he doesn't have an MVP. Karl Malone does. Who cares? Russell Westbrook does. Who cares? At the Y, who you picking? Malone, Westbrook, or Kawhi? Who you picking at the Y? You're picking Kawhi.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So it's just bonkers. Pro Football Focus, I love those guys. But they have, of their 21 riders, 18 have picked the Cowboys to win the division over Philadelphia. In fact, Pro Football Focus, the Cowboys are the second most common Super Bowl pick in the NFC, Dallas. Fun, fluff, fireworks, I don't get it. So what are the seven things, since I've been doing this show for 20 years, the seven things that matter in the NFL? Now, I've always said my core four: owner, GM, coach, quarterback. Let's add three more. O-line, D-line, you can't win if you're bad in the trenches. And weapons. Weapons matters now. It's a passing league more than a running league. Weapons matter. I used to not be as big on weapons, but they do matter. It's why New England deteriorated last year. Their weapons were awful. The seven things that matter. Let's line up Philadelphia and Dallas. Okay. Owner, I'm not into vain owners. I'll take Philadelphia. GM, Howie Roseman, as sharp as they get. Coach, Doug Peterson's more creative. They both have a Super Bowl, but he's more creative than McCarthy. And I do think creativity is the new norm. Quarterback, we watched at the end of last year with deck chairs and lawn furniture. Carson Wentz beat Dak with all sorts of weapons. Offensive weapons, that's Dallas clearly. Great wide receiving core. Tremendous. That is Dallas plus Zeke. A defensive line, I'll take Philly, Fletcher Cox. Offensive line, should be noted, neither as good as they were 2 to 3 years ago. Travis Frederick's a big loss at center for the Cowboys. Tyron Smith doesn't feel like a 16-game left tackle. Slight edge to Dallas. That's 5-2, folks, and the seven things that matter. Dallas reminds me of a house with a plumbing issue, and the owners tried to solve it by repainting the house. It looks great when you drive by. Oh, my. Cowboys landscaping? Oh, my God. It's just like the talk of the neighborhood. Look at the landscaping, the lights all over the house, the paint job. Oh, my God. But when it comes to, like, plumbing and electrical and the kitchen and the foundation, I like Philadelphia. That's the stuff that wins in this league, not the landscaping and the new paint job. You go inside the Cowboy house, there's a leak in the bathroom. Lights don't work in the dining room. And two rooms don't have furniture. But God, the landscaping, CD Lamb, oh my word. I don't get it. What wins in this league? owner, GM, coach, quarterback, O-line, D-line, and some weapons. Philadelphia is the best team. They were last year, overcoming massive injuries. It's going to be a very disappointing year in the state of Texas.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So when Baker Mayfield came out, I was very critical of his judgment. I thought he was a good talent and a great prospect. And so when I said, everybody has a comp, right? Like I said, when Andrew Luck came out, I said his comp is John Elway. And you laughed at it, but the first 5 years, it looked like John Elway. And everybody's got a comp. And I said with Baker, everybody was given these grandiose comps. And I said, I think his comp is Case Keenum with a better arm. He's got a better arm than Case. Athletic ability, size. Case is more mature. Baker's got a better arm, but it kind of looks the same to me. That was considered clickbait and outrageous. They're now on the same team. And about a week ago, there was a scrimmage for the Browns. I'd like to read you what Mary Kay Cabot reported. Here's what happened at the scrimmage. Mayfield got a slight wake-up call a couple of weeks ago. His first team offense lost the scrimmage to Case Keenum in the second team offense. And Mayfield was working against the second team defense. And Keenum, who had the second team offense, was facing the first team defense. Oh, by the way, the session ended with Baker throwing a pick in a goal line situation. Is that clickbait? Now, I think Baker's going to have a good year. But I think Case Keenum, if he was starting today with this roster, would have a good season. And if Baker does go 11-5, don't send me your tweets, because Case Keenum went 13-3 a couple years ago when he had talent. Ask yourself this. Who do you trust? I trust Vegas, Foxbet, people that are in the gaming space. The Browns, with all this talent, have an over-under of 8.5. If Case Keenum was announced the starter today, you really think it would drop precipitously? I mean, if you had a great quarterback with these weapons, like Mahomes, it would be 11.5. Aaron Rodgers, 11. Russell Wilson, 11, 11.5. With all these weapons, Noah's Ark, two of everything, the over-under in Cleveland with Baker is 8.5. And that's guaranteeing two wins easily over Cincinnati. If Case Keenum's a starter tomorrow, what do you think? It drops to what? 6? Nah. Case Keenum won 13 games a couple years ago with Minnesota. I am not saying Case is better than Baker. What I am saying is what you viewed as a clickbait. Now they play together, scrimmaging. It's not crazy. Baker is talented, but he's not. He's not top 6, 7, 8, 9. We got to slow down. Never was. We got to slow down on that. All right. I know a football season is official when I bring Greg Cosell on. This is like Christmas without the snow and the chill. Greg Cosell, 41 years at NFL Films, is joining us by the phone today. I can't even believe, even my wife said this. She goes, it's going to be so weird to watch Tom Brady in an orange uniform, and Bill Belichick is not on the sideline, and my wife doesn't even like sports. And listen, I don't recall what you had said. I mean, Tom's obviously got a lot of weapons. The running back position is much better today than it was a year ago in Tampa. But I do look at Brady as not much of a playmaker now, more of he's excellent when in terms of efficiency. So, but this offense has some deep threats and downfield throw guys. How do you think it all looks early, Greg, Tampa Bay, Tom, and these weapons?
Well, assuming everybody's healthy, Colin, I think that it will be a very interesting mix of Bruce Arians' approach, which is being aggressive and pushing the ball down the field, and what Brady does really well, which is a lot of play action, quick game. We saw what they did in New England the last number of years, all those bang play action throws in the middle of the field. He certainly has tight ends to work with. Godwin is phenomenal working between the numbers, very strong, very physical. So the parts are in place to run both an Arians offense and a Tom Brady offense. And Arians has been doing this a long time, and I think he'll mix and match, and it will end up being a very, very effective offense. But I just want to say one thing. You said something that fascinated me about being efficient versus being a playmaker. Do we believe now that you cannot be a high-level NFL quarterback if you're not, quote-unquote, a playmaker? In other words, a Mahomes, a Watson, players who make plays outside of the structure of the play call and the design of the play. Is that now absolutely part of the game? In other words, are we not going to see Tom Brady's and Drew Brees's and Phillip Rivers anymore?
I think the way the game has changed, they will still win games. But when you face a Mahomes and you do not have that element in your game, and Mahomes and the young quarterbacks are increasingly efficient and make plays, I'm not saying it's going away, but the structure, the rules, I think the added playmaking with increased efficiency, because I think Mahomes will just get more efficient over time.
I would agree.
I think it's going to be, I'm not saying Jared Goff can't win games, but if I get Mahomes' efficiency and the over-the-top playmaking, boy, that's a rough obstacle, right?
No, and I'm not disputing that, but it's interesting that Jared Goff was in a Super Bowl 2 years ago, did not win, obviously. Jimmy Garoppolo was in the Super Bowl last year, didn't win, but played reasonably well. That's a question that I've spent all summer as I've broken down at home while I was, you know, as we all were at home, I was anyway. I watched probably 20 quarterbacks did deep dives, and it's a question every single day watching tape. I kept going back and forth in my head as to the evolution of the quarterback position and where we're going.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny. So Pete Carroll, big at USC, and then he goes to Seattle and he wins a Super Bowl, and we have just anointed Pete as he is he's just tremendous. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. But now analytics are coming in. Now the Wolves are sharpening their teeth, and people are saying, listen, they run the football too much. Russell Wilson has to. It's kind of a Jurassic offense at times. The offensive line play has not been good. And Wilson seems like, increasingly, Russell is saving a very outdated offense. Is that a fair criticism when you look at film of Pete Carroll and what their dimensions offensively?
Well, here's the way I would answer that question. And I love Russell Wilson. I think he's going to be the league MVP this year. I love the player. But for years now, I think he's been in the league 8 years.
Yeah.
So they've had the same head coach, but they've had two different coordinators. And they've chosen to play this way from day one.
Yes.
So the question is why? And only Pete Carroll can really answer that. So are they playing this way because Pete Carroll is beholden to a philosophy, no matter who the quarterback is? Or are they playing this way because, as good as we all think Russell Wilson is, and there's no question he's really good, that's not my point, but that they believe that they get the best out of Russell Wilson playing this way, and if they were to quote-unquote let him loose, as a lot of people are saying, that would somehow diminish his play. So they're with him every day, Colin. We're not. So I don't know the answer to that, but they've chosen to play this way for all 8 years that Russell Wilson's been in the league.
Yeah. It's driving some people crazy. I'm one of them.
No, I love Rob. Believe me, I love Russell Wilson. I mean, this is a team, they get their big plays in two ways. They go max pro, and they push the ball down the field in normal down and distance situations, or Russell Wilson moves around and is as good as there is in making those second reaction improvisational plays. But they are not a team that comes out throwing the ball.
They're not.
This team is built, as you said, there's no mystery to their offense. It's run the ball with base runs, play action, and play action boot. That's what their offense is.
So I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers. 2 years ago, there was a discussion. I did not buy into it, but it was a narrative and a discussion on talk shows. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, which is the GOAT? To which I said, I don't think it's really close. I think Montana, Peyton Manning, Elway, you can argue people. I need more of Aaron. I need more years. Now we see three straight years of Aaron's declining passer rating and completion percentage. Now, it's always the push-pull, the egg, you know, we always ask about that. Is it Green Bay's front office doesn't give him weapons? Or is it Aaron who's not coachable? I do think they have a star receiver, a star back, and a way above average offensive front. When you now in your offseason look at Aaron Rodgers and we point fingers at the decline, what do you see?
Well, and I've talked about this with you for years. And I think when you look at Aaron Rodgers, you see a player who is supremely talented, capable of making outside of structure plays at the highest level in the game, can make any throw to any part of the field from any body position, any platform, throwing platform. But, and this is not an interpretation, this is what the tape tells you, there are a lot of throws within structure that he leaves on the field. And he now has a coach whose background is somewhat Kyle Shanahan, who believes in pure structure, that the scheming of the offense dictates how the quarterback is going to play and where he throws the football. And I don't know what's in Aaron Rodgers' head, Kyle, and neither do you, I'm sure, but maybe he struggles with that. I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you that the film shows that there are too many throws that he leaves on the field. I think he only threw 3 touchdowns last year off play action. Someone can easily check that. But in an offense, in a Matt LaFleur offense, that's a very, very low number.
Well, their draft showed you they have questions about him. That certainly for sure didn't give them another wide.
It also told you, by the way, how they see their offense. They drafted another back who I know is 3rd on the depth chart right now, Dylan, as the season starts, but he'll play. And then they drafted in the 3rd round a kid from Cincinnati, Josiah DeGora, who essentially is a Kyle Juszczyk type player.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Matt LaFleur is telling you how he sees his offense.
Let's go to Jimmy G, 21-5 as a starter, but I can't deny that Kyle Shanahan took the ball out of his hands in key playoff spots. And I have said it's very important that your coach trusts you. I didn't feel like at the end of the year he did. Is that fair?
No, I think they're a highly schemed offense, and I think that Garoppolo's at his best when he's rhythmic in his drop, his set in his delivery. I think he's a really good fit for that. See, this is the classic case of scheme versus quarterback. You know, it's a really well-schemed offense. So when Garoppolo executes the offense well, people don't say, oh, Garoppolo is good. They say Kyle's really well-schemed. So, and then Garoppolo, if he has a bad moment, then they say, oh, Garoppolo's not very good. You can't really have it both ways. I think Garoppolo has the mentality and mindset of a pocket quarterback. He plants and delivers. He'll sit there in the pocket late in the down on his back foot, and with that compact delivery, he'll make throws.
Yep.
He can make throws without stepping with his front foot, so he can be patient in the pocket. He was very good on 3rd down. He trusted the scheme. He turned it loose. You know, in some ways, it's like saying if a basketball coach, you know, gets guys open jump shots, are we blaming the guy hitting the open jump shots? Are we saying, well, he's not very good? You know, this is a well-schemed offense that Garoppolo executes well. Is he Patrick Mahomes? No, he's not Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't have that kind of ability. But he's a very efficient pocket player in a well-schemed offense. And don't forget, he doesn't have a ton of experience. He's still growing.
Yeah. By the way, I was saying this earlier to start the show today, is that, you know, we forget with Mahomes. He was only 11th in completion percentage, 7th in passer rating, and only had 8 touchdown passes last 6 games. He admitted he just learned to read a defense. There's a lot of meat on the bone. I think we're just seeing the beginning of him. I think what we see with Jared Goff, this is what he is, a beautiful deep ball thrower with a nice touch. I look at Mahomes and I think, we could have a lot more. He could go to another level. Is that hyperbolic, or do you buy some of that?
No, I think that he'll get better. You know, it's interesting. And this is a great conversation. I don't know the answer to this. The other kinds of things I think about with quarterbacks. Will Mahomes, as he advances, be less likely to be a second reaction player? In other words, always have that in his back pocket as a parachute because he's capable of it, but will he become even more efficient from the pocket and stay in the pocket more because he'll see things quicker, better, and deliver the football? You know, that's the thing. As you get older and play in the league longer and learn more and digest more, do you end up being far more efficient from the pocket? Because there's no question he's a great thrower of the football. You know, now he moves around a lot. So it's a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. All right. Our big play of the week, obviously, will go back to last year, and it does include Sir Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and I chose this play because it was the first possession of the third quarter in the AFC playoff game last year between the Chiefs and the Texans, obviously playing tonight. And the Texans had come out in this game and played almost all man-to-man coverage in the first half. So they come out in the third quarter, and let's run the play right now. They come out in the third quarter on the first possession, the Texans do, and they end up playing zone, cover two. And here's a 48-yard completion to Sammy Watkins. And the reason I chose this play is because it had so many cool elements. See, the Texans showed man-to-man initially. You see the five-on-five, just as they had done the entire first half. This looks like man coverage. And then if you focus your attention on three specific defenders, you can see that these guys will move in such a way that it becomes cover two. And they move just before the snap after everything has been all set. So now what happens is man-to-man became cover two. The Texans rotated. And don't forget, they played zone man the entire half. Then you look at the corner up top, another cover two corner. So Watkins is just running a corner route. Now, this is a great route to run against cover two because it's in a void. And Mahomes sees it instantly. This is why I love this play, Colin, because Mahomes saw this instantly after spending the whole first half having to defeat man. He sees zone, and they rotate to zone. It was disguise and late movement, and yet he saw that instantly. So it kind of plays off what we were just talking about, his ability to recognize, his ability to eliminate and isolate and make the right throw.
God, what's amazing, he had to do it in about half a second.
And that's playing quarterback.
No kidding. That's a good piece of tape. Greg Cosell, great talking to you. We'll speak soon.
All right. Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, Aqib Talib has officially retired. He played 12 years in the NFL, and almost half of them he was a Pro Bowler. He will get Hall of Fame votes. Retires now at 34 years old with 35 career interceptions. And he's got a new podcast called At Call to the Booth. He announced his retirement. Jared Goff was his first interview, former teammate. Always been outspoken, incredibly raw, very respected by people in the NFL. Wade Phillips loved him. Bill Belichick loved him. And Belichick tried to get him to come back and play for the Patriots. And he said, I just want you to guard tight ends, nothing more. And then Aqib said, no, I see your opponents. There's too many good tight ends. I'm not coming back. So Aqib Talib now joins us from Allen, Texas, where he's got a beautiful home and a big family. So Belichick calls you, and he's like, Aqib, you know, and you and Bill, you're Bill's kind of player. You're tough, no nonsense, physical, prepared, get right in the guy's face. So give me the phone call. What did Belichick say to you?
He just asked me, what? Am I coming? Like, hey, I got a role for you, man. You coming? I'm like, well, what's the role? He kind of explained the role a little bit, you know, and immediately I fell in love with it. I fell in love with it, Colin. I really was all in, man, and then I let my mental, the whispers, you know, the quiet, you talk to yourself. But I think I really need that. I always do that, man. I always, you know, go through the pros and cons of the situation. And all my thoughts was just so negative about the situation, not the team or anything, just about myself. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, oh, nah. Once you negative-minded like that, man, you're not ready to go. You're not ready to go. So I never pull up to a situation not ready to go. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Hey, it is what it is, man. We all get older. We all got to move on sometime. I think it was just my time.
So it's interesting. You have played in a couple of great teams. So Kansas City is still pretty young. They win a Super Bowl. Now you're everybody's target. Now,
right.
Guys getting paid. Now everybody's feeling it. They're feeling good about themselves. Take me to what it's like to be on a championship-level team. You come back into camp, everybody's a little fat. Everybody feels good about themselves. Is it
right.
Hard? We don't have very many repeat champions in this league. Was it hard for you? Is it hard for players?
I think the problem is after you win a Super Bowl, Colin, you go back to your hometown and you like the star of your hometown. So everybody's a rock star, right? So for January, February, March, April, May, maybe you lock in June or something. I think guys just really don't lock in the offseason the same way they did before. The same way they did what the year before that made them win the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Usually
yeah.
A Super Bowl team, they had an amazing offseason and that's why they won the Super Bowl. So I think this season was unique because COVID kind of kept guys focused. You can't be in the restaurants and the clubs for March, April, May, June. So I think the Chiefs is going to be just fine. I think the Super Bowl hangover comes from that right there. You do that right there for – you have a parade for 4 months straight. So you're just not going to be ready to go. But with COVID, Colin, I think guys was in the house. Me as an athlete, I was in the house of COVID. All I did was come to my gym every day. I brought my kids and my nephews to the gym every day. We got it in. So working out was the only thing that we really could do. So, man, I think the Chiefs, COVID kind of saved the Chiefs. And I think they'll be back at it this year, Colin.
Aqib Talib joining us. You know, it's interesting. You know Tom Brady well, and you know his intensity. He's kind of unique. He's just one of these guys that can just play forever. Now he goes to Tampa. A bunch of young dudes don't have a history of winning. And Tom can bark. Tom can get after you. And if you're not used to it, you know, I want to see Tom working with all these young players. And after a two-game losing streak, he's barking at the young guys. Do you think Tom could get a little pushback in Tampa?
Nah, they're going to love him. I've been in the locker room with him, been to war with him. Colin, the guys going to love him, man. They already respect him because he's Tom Brady. Then when he really gets there, he got there now, they really get the chance to see his work ethic, see how smart he is, man, see how good of a guy he is, man. He's not cocky. He's not better than nobody. He just comes and put in the work. So guys respect that, man. I guarantee you his O-line love him. I guarantee you Mike Evans and Godwin, I guarantee you they absolutely love him. They love his work ethic, and they try to be like him, man. So I don't think it'll be any pushback, man, in the league, man. We respect the greats. That's what all guys do, young guys, old guys. You're going to respect the greats, especially if he's not big-headed and his work ethic is probably the strongest in the building. You know what I'm saying? So I think they're going to be just fine.
That's right. So immediately with Tom Brady, you were both elite. You were both Pro Bowl. Day two, he was just your dude. You never doubted him.
Never doubted him, man. I seen the work ethic. He came and talked to me. I pull up to I try to get to work early. Tommy is there, you know what I'm saying? So it's hard not to respect what he do, man. He's already won six Super Bowls, numerous Pro Bowls every year, all pros, everything. So it's hard not to respect what he do, man. And when you meet him in person and you get to actually watch that work ethic live, you fall in love with it. So it's football, man. It's a class of 2,000 guys, man. One thing we all do, we respect work. You know what I'm saying? And the guy whose work ethic is top-notch, you don't have no choice but to respect that.
Here's something that's interesting. Not everybody reacts the same way to money. You know, Russell Wilson gets money. He puts in the time. Jalen Ramsey's unbelievably talented. I think he's great. But there's been a little pushback in Jacksonville. Last year, I thought he was a little hot and cold. There were games I loved him and games I didn't think he was as engaged. Now right. Jalen's got all the money, all the power, all the leverage. Should I worry all about Jalen? He pushed back on Jacksonville. I thought he disengaged a couple times last year. Not everybody does the same thing when they get $100 million. Are you right. worried at all about Jalen Ramsey's consistency going forward?
I'm not, man. I'm not, Colin. He's so talented. And I think the best part of Jalen, the best part of his game, is he's so competitive. So regardless on how he is with the media or how he is with his coach, when he get on the field and you give him an assignment versus this guy, it's an all-out war. He acts like it's the Super Bowl when he goes against a number one receiver every time. So that's why I hung my cleats up, Colin, because I'm like, man, I used to have that in me. I'm welcoming all challenges, and I'm going to win all challenges. And when I ain't had that no more, I'm like, oh, no, that's my strong suit. I think that's his strong suit. So, and as long as he got that, I don't think that'll leave you until you lose a step. Then you'll be like, damn, can I really compete with these guys? You know what I'm saying? So, as long as he got that competitive edge, and he's not going to get no shorter. He's not going to get any skinnier or nothing. He's going to be 6'2", 210 or whatever. So, as long as he's that size and he got that competitive edge, man, I'm not worried about him versus no number one receiver around the league.
You know, it's interesting. Tom opens up with Drew Brees. It was a very interesting offseason for the Saints. Drew Brees came out. He angered some teammates. He apologized. And the teammates are like, you know, we got your back. But it was a different offseason. It was the first time I've ever seen teammates of Drew Brees outwardly questioned him. In fact, some were
very,
they were angry. And I said at the time, I said, I think Drew's a good dude, but he's a little tone deaf. And the bottom line, if your teammates are out on you, you're in big trouble.
Definitely.
Do you think it's all forgotten? Do you think that Drew, it's over? Like, everybody's all, I mean, they brought in Malcolm Jenkins. He's a veteran. Emmanuel Sanders. These are real grown-ups. These guys. But I do want, is there any lingering? Could there be distractions in New Orleans? You've been in these locker rooms. What do you think?
Colin, the NFL and winning, like, I mean, some teams are just sorry, so who cares what they got going. But NFL and winning teams is so camaraderie-driven, man. Those guys is like brothers, honestly. You know what I'm saying? All the games, all the teams I've been on, and we've been good teams, we was like brothers. The teams where we've been bad teams, it was like after work, I go this way, you go this way. Everybody just, you know, go separate ways. And it's so camaraderie-driven, man. I don't know. I don't believe in it. I think it's still some lingering issues there. Some guys might look at Drew. It's still going to be a bunch of jokes in the locker room. He's going to have to walk on eggshells about what he said, what he say to the media, what he say in all conversations when the thing come up. So it's so camaraderie driven, man. I expect them to still be a good team, but I just don't expect it to be NFC Championship, Super Bowl type of camaraderie in that locker room. Because, I mean, the leader, he was out of line. He was out of point blank period. He was out of line. His favorite receiver, his number one guy, checked him for it. And it's always going to be a little something lingering in that background, in my opinion.
Aqib Talib joining us. Good to have him on. By the way, he's got a new podcast with Harrison Sanford. It's called At Call to the Booth. Announced his retirement. Jared Goff interview in his first episode. So, okay, it's another season with the Dallas Cowboys, and everybody loves Dallas, and you just live right up the road from them. And I'm a Philadelphia guy. I always joke about the Cowboys. They're like a house with a plumbing issue, and they don't solve it. They just paint the house.
Right, you know, so just patch it up.
Yeah, they needed a secondary, and they went and got C.D. Lamb. You know,
but they did get somebody in the secondary, Colin.
Who?
We can't sleep on Trayvon Diggs. We can't. He been in my gym, A plus D1 out here in Dallas, Carrollton. He been in the gym. He been in the lab with myself, and I really got a chance to see him, Colin. I really got a chance to break down his movement, and really, he's going to be a star in his league. Remember where you heard it, Colin. Trayvon Diggs is going to be a star in his league. He sent me some clips 2 nights ago. The guy had 5 interceptions in practice. So I think they had almost the best draft in the East, in my opinion, man. You get a guy like CeeDee Lamb, and then you get Trayvon Diggs in the second round. He's going to come in. He's going to start on the other side of Anthony Brown, and he's going to be an impact. I really believe he's going to be an impact because he's a wide-out playing DB, Colin.
All right, so you like the Cowboys.
I like the Cowboys, man. I always like, you know, they always switch off who win. The Eagles won last year. I think the Cowboys will win this year. I think the offense speaks for itself, man. You add CeeDee Lamb to it, half the time that might take another safety out the box. It's going to help Zeke out. He's really going to be able to get that run game going. I think as long as you run it, I think they're going to run a lot of 11 personnel, kind of like Green Bay did. That, you know, that Green Bay style of offense. And I think Zeke could be great in it, man, because it's going to be hard to play single high with those three receivers. You can't say, I got 3 DBs who can match up with those 3 receivers. So you almost have to play coverage. You almost have to play too high coverage. Excuse me. You almost have to play too high coverage. So, man, I think it's going to help out the run game. I like the Cowboys' defense, man. That front 7 is crazy. And I think that one addition, Trayvon Diggs, man, he'll make enough plays in that secondary to make the Cowboys win some games on defense.
You know, I told Joy, when you first came on the show, I said, Aqib Talib's not going to like me. I'm a loudmouth. He's a tough guy. I'm not a tough. And yet, from the very first minute you have been on the show, I think you're one of my favorite guests. I thought you weren't going to like me because you were a tough guy.
Hey, you could hire me. I don't want to. I mean, it could be me, you, and Joy. You know what I'm saying? We could kick it. That's our camaraderie. I think we do great, Colin. I think we have an awesome show. Our rapport is outstanding. How you doing, Joy? I didn't even speak. I'm sorry, Joy. How you doing? I don't do that. I always speak.
Well, I like you because you are incredibly authentic and honest, and most guys aren't. They're protecting buddies and they're protecting stuff, and you don't do that. You're incredibly, as they say, real. And I just love it, and I love having you on, and I hope your podcast crushes. and come on regularly, and we love having you.
Hey, I appreciate it, Colin. It's good to see y'all.